My name is Al Kasten, and I am an alcoholic. Thank you for inviting me to talk about the flying of the Confederate battle flag over government buildings. Oh, wrong group, sorry. Plus, I need to get new material. I think I know most of the people in here. This group plays a very special place in my heart. It's one of the first groups that I attended regularly when I moved to Nashville. Matter of fact, I came to this group on a house hunting trip in March of 93. My wife was getting transferred here, and I wanted to make sure that they had real AA here in Nashville, and I knew it couldn't be anything like it was in Louisiana, but I was shocked to find out there are some really wonderful people here in Alcoholics Anonymous in Nashville. Okay, so now a little bit about the speaker for tonight. I was kind of caught off guard, didn't prepare a speech, but this gentleman I've known for more than a few 24 hours, probably longer than many of you in here have been sober, and I have been truly impressed with his commitment, his dedication to the recovery program. And he'll probably go into more detail about this, but as some of you may know, he's retired military. And that being said, he's very regimented. And so we had to meet at a predetermined time and a predetermined place, 1,600 hours every Friday. But I'll tell you what, I have grown a lot through my association with this gentleman. I feel like God puts people in my life. I don't really have much choice in the matter. He places them there because I need them in my life. You may not share that same sentiment, but the longer you hang around Alcoholics Anonymous, you may find that to be true. God puts me in people's lives, and he puts people in my life to help me grow and walk this path and find some level of spirituality that's going to see me through even the darkest night. But anyway, I'll let this fella tell you his story. And with that, I give you Tim T.
Good evening, everybody. My name's Tim, and I'm an alcoholic. And hopefully you can hear me. I'll stand back if I have to. It was kind of an honor and privilege when Ed talked to me about 2-3 months ago. We were talking about getting a chance to speak over here again. For those that don't know me, this was my home group back in 2008 before I went on to another way of life beyond work and all the other things that most of you know me from when I first moved here. I think poor Susan got the luxury of driving with me all over southern Middle Tennessee a couple of nights after we got out of a 9 o'clock meeting. So I have a lot of fond memories here. And there is a lot, as Al said, a lot of friendly faces who I do know not only from Yet Group, but I think I also know a few from Shade Tree. Let me just start from the beginning. It seems like the longer you stay around the rooms, it's easier to talk about recovery than talk about the drunk log. So hopefully we'll keep that real short and talk about what life's really about, being sober. I wasn't born here, as you can probably tell. When I open my mouth, I don't speak Southern. Even though when I go to Chicago, they say you're not from here anymore. But I was born and raised in the southeast side of Chicago. I was the youngest of three. I was born on Friday 13th. There's 13 years between my brother and I. And I was my mother's 13th pregnancy. So I was probably doomed to be an alcoholic way before I ever picked up my first drink. You know, little 13 number humor, so to speak. But I was raised in a very strong Irish Catholic family. And our mom was the heart and center of my world as well as our family's world. And in 1971, my world came to a crushing blow at about age 15 when she passed away. But before that, backtrack, I was one of those really good little altar boys, serves morning service every morning before school started. And I was in a public school, so I was fortunate to serve Mass and then not have to go upstairs but go down the road to school. But I did learn real quick what port wine was. Little Miss Edna, who is our acolyte director back then, she knew my mother very well. She probably knew everything about me, my brother, and my sister than I'd ever think of. And she caught me and a couple of my buddies sipping on the port wine one Monday morning before service. And of course, we had to go see the priest and, you know, ask for forgiveness for, you know, stealing the port wine. But right then and there, I think I knew there was something special there. There was something that I liked. Didn't quite know all about it, but I knew there was something I liked. One nice thing about being an altar boy is, and everybody knew you, you served a lot of weddings and you served a lot of funerals, especially Irish Catholic ones and Italians and all that. And so we would get invited to a lot of the receptions, even though we may not have been a family member. And I learned, you know, you can get drinks when you're at weddings, even though I was, what, about 12 years of age, and I was learning I can do that. Because when I was with the family, it was Mogan David wine with 7-Up is what you got. But when I was there, I learned there was other things. And so quickly, even at an early age, in my before teens, I found out what my first hangover was. I found out that you can do stupid things when you've been drinking half the evening and afternoon. But it still hadn't begun yet. It was kind of like the tip of the iceberg. It just grew from there. Through school, I did all the normal things. I was in scouting. I was a three-sport letterman through high school. Had a scholarship to college. I went for 2 years. And when college was done, I was, because I went in the Marine Corps in 1977. And you talk about finding a dream come true, this alcoholic found it. But what probably was the tip of the iceberg on that decision of my life was my mom died when I was 15. It was my freshman year of high school, and she taught at the school. She was a teacher's aide on the south side there. And my sister graduated from there, and my brother went to an all-boys school in the north, kind of south side of Chicago. But when I was in my second year of college in April, my grandmother died, who I was extremely close to. Because my mom died, she was mom. She wasn't just my grandma, she was my best friend, and she was the substitute of everything in my life. When she died, it was right before finals. And I remember I was so afraid to go home because I was failing in finance. And I knew my dad would kill me if I had an F. So before I went home for the funeral, I withdrew from the course, thinking, okay, that's easy way out. You know, Dad will never find out. Well, when the report cards came out a month later, when I got home for the summer, he found out. And he threatened me and all sorts of stuff. And I said, okay, this was May now. And immediately that summer, I went to the recruiter and said, I'm 21 years of age, I want to enlist. And so I did. So July 6th, 1977, right after 4th of July weekend, I went off to San Diego, California. I was 21, but for the first time in my life, I actually drew a silver breath for 3 months because Marine Corps boot camp back then was 3 months long. So I went through boot camp and, you know, got through that, didn't have any DTs. I wasn't that bad yet. But when I got out and I went home, my brother and everybody was waiting on me because they hadn't seen me for 3 months. Now, mind you, he's 13 years older than I am, so I looked up to this man. He was my best friend, but he was also my idol when I was a young boy. So I came home and we commenced the partying and had a good time. And then, of course, I had to go back to California. I only had 10 days liberty while I was after boot camp. I went back to California. And because I turned 22, I was the only non-com that can go buy the beer. Everybody else was 19, 18, 17, or 20 years of age, and they couldn't buy. So I was lucky because they would come to me and say, here's the money, you buy, or we'll buy, and you get the freebies. So I lived pretty good for the next year in California. And I drank a lot, but I never got in trouble. I learned that if you go out at night and drink, but you get up at 4 a.m. and go run and lift weights, it all equalized itself. So I thought, you know, that was my stupidity, that it would just become, you know, no problem. But slowly that started becoming a little harder. In 1978, I went over to Okinawa, Japan for the first time. Now, mind you, I was 23 years of age. I've been in a foreign country in Turkey when I was 6 years of age, and I learned what wine and all that stuff was. But I get over to Okinawa, and they have a thing called Mojo with deabsence. And if anybody in here has been in the military and been overseas, you know what deabsence is. It's opium-based. And you talk about a good drunk, they make bathtub mojo. And it's a bunch, and God knows what they throw in there besides the deabsence. And so now I'm really escalating the drinking. Still working out, still doing my PT and all that fun stuff. But because I was so good at what I did in the military, I never got in trouble. I had this guardian angel over my shoulder all the time, who I still choose to call my mother. But I never got in trouble. And I should have been. There was many times I probably should have been court-martialed. But towards the end of that 12 months, though, I was out on liberty. I was up for meritorious board the next day, had all my stuff squared away, did all my studying. I knew my military subjects. So my friend said, you deserve to go out and party tonight before the board. And I was a little scared because I was like, I can't mess this up. This is a meritorious promotion. I don't want to be stupid. Well, sure enough, I was stupid. I went out. We found a mojo bar. We went in there and started partying. And back in those days, they had Cinderella Liberty and the field grade officers with the senior enlisted staff and show would come out and walk the bill to make sure that us young Marines and sailors were staying out of trouble. Well, I got stupid and mouthed off to this major and told him, I knew more about the Marine Corps than he did. And, of course, he brought me back to base the first time. Brought me back and said, go sleep it off. Don't worry about it. So, because he knew me. And he turned out the next day, I found out he was a staff judge advocate of Camp Hansen, Okinawa. So that's not the right person to piss off because he's a lawyer. And I'm pissing this guy off royally that night. And I snuck back out. God knows how I did it, but me and another buddy, we snuck back out, went back to the mojo bar, and continued to go. Well, one thing leads to another. One drunk with a bunch of other drunks and Marines at best, we got in a fight. And then it got broke up by the same major. So I knew I was done. I was like, oh, shoot. But he was pretty good about it. He brought me back. He said, I'm sending you to the barracks, and the duty NCO is going to watch you, and tomorrow's another day. Well, I don't remember too much about the rest of that part until I woke up, and I saw my uniform, and I knew I had the board. I was drunk enough, but sober drunk enough to know what I had to do the next day. And I went to the board, and God knows how, but I was smart enough and passed the board. But what I didn't know is when the board was done and they reconvene and bring you back in, I had to report to the sergeant major and four first sergeants. And all I know is the base sergeant major told me I had to report to this major, right after all that was done. And I was like, oh, shoot. And I knew who the major was, but I didn't know where he worked until I got to the building. I'm like, oh, shoot, this guy's – he's our legal aide for the base. And so my punishment was I had to apologize to this major, swear on a stack of whatevers that I would never do this again, and I was being meritorious promoted sergeant that afternoon. And but if I hadn't been smart enough to apologize, it would have been probably the brig I would have went. So fortunately, a lot of people looked out for me. I think I learned real early in the military what we call WAPA, is Warrant Officer Protection Society. But there was an NCO one too. And if you were good at what you do, other drunks like us took care of you. And of course, my sergeant major and first sergeant were best drinking buddies. And we never got to drink with them because they were the senior guys. So progressed. I came back stateside and got married. And now my wife I married was a girl I met in college back in 77, 78. And we hadn't seen each other for a year now. So we get married. I'm back in November, go home the night before the wedding, get married, and the rest was history because I was probably drunk for about 3-4 days after that. And we're driving off to 29 Palms, California, which is somewhere out in the south of Mojave Desert near Palm Springs, California, if you don't know where that's at. So she cried the whole first night there because I lived in the barracks. So a one-room apartment sounded really great to me. But this is a spoiled young lady who lived in a very good family upbringing, and she had all the nice things. And so she was having nothing to do with a one-bedroom apartment. And she had nothing to do with my drinking at that point. She saw what was going on real quickly. So after 10 months in California, I get reassigned to come out to North Carolina to Camp Lejeune. Well, en route, we stopped in Chicago, where we were from, because she lived in Joliet. I lived in the south side of Chicago. And I had to go to a school in Virginia for about 3 months before we carried on to Camp Lejeune. So she stayed home, but the night we got back home in 1980, my brother and his sponsor 12-stepped me. This is August of 1980. I had no idea what was going on. All I knew is the last time I saw my brother, he was drunk as I was at my wedding, and that was December of 79. So it was like, wait a minute, what happened? You know, he's not drinking, and I got this white-haired guy trying to talk to me about 12 steps. And the way he did it is he covered up step one and made me read 2 through 12. I was like, okay. And I made my few smart comments and said, well, isn't that the way life's supposed to be? You know, trust God and all these good things and, you know, the Boy Scout honor and all that. And he politely told me, as he's peeling off the paper off step one, he said, okay, smart one, read this. And he said, you admitted we were powerless over alcohol and my life had become unmanageable. And I looked at him and I said, I don't have a drinking problem. You know, I'm not unmanageable. What are you talking about? I'm a Marine, you know. And he knew better, and so did my brother. My brother had 9 months sober. I didn't know while I was in California, he went to a treatment center for 28 days in Chicago. And this was during the strike of 80, when Standard Oil had a huge strike that year. And so he ended up getting sober and stayed sober all the way to this year of 35 years. He just celebrated March 5th. So I'm pretty honored and grateful to know that him and his sponsor saw enough of me to educate me back then. But so I go on to Virginia and continue to drink. Told everybody back home I was, you know, being a good boy and doing what you told me I should do. Didn't go to any meetings, though, but I was being a good boy. They really believed that one. And then November of 80, I reported to Camp Lejeune with my wife, who had already just moved there like 2 weeks prior to get a place for us to live. And the first night home, I said, you know, I think we deserve, you know, a bottle of wine, you know. And she's like, I thought you don't drink. I said, well, I don't, but, you know, it's been 3 months. You know, what's it going to hurt? You like wine, and we can have a little wine. And by the time she realized that bottle was gone and I was looking for the second one, and she called my brother and said he hasn't changed a bit. And basically, I was given the ultimatum. Now, I haven't even checked into my command yet. Well, I was still on leave in transit from one post to the other. And she told me, if you don't go to your first sergeant tomorrow when you check in, I'm going to. And basically said, you know, you're going to get help or I'm gone. And, of course, I never got in trouble in the Marine Corps. And I was going to be darned if a brand-new bride was going to get me in trouble at a brand-new first duty station. And so I went in. First sergeant was going over my book, and we're talking. And he says, Tim, you got any questions? I said, yes, sir, one. I said, my wife thinks I'm an alcoholic. Now, this guy don't know me from Adam, and it's the first introduction as a sergeant to my first sergeant. And he said, really? He said, well, why? And I said, well, when I drink, I don't always stop. What I didn't know is he was good friends with the SACO on base. He was a sergeant that worked with the first sergeant years ago, and they had a long-term friendship. First sergeant drank, but he was kind of a, you know, onesie-twosie type drinker. Not I could relate to, you know. And so I got introduced to this Dennis Bracey, who I hated right up the first day I met him because he was a skinny little pencil neck, skinny. He was from Arkansas. And I was like, oh, my God, this guy can't. You know, what's he going to do for me, you know? So I had to go through a five-day workshop, did that. And by the time the fourth day hit, I was already had a bed for a six-week treatment. So obviously I must have been pretty bad, or at least they thought I was. And but back in 81, when I went through, I went in January, got out in April, or February, and came out in April. And back then, the Marine Corps said, if you stayed sober for 1 year, it was a success. So I said, 1 year? And I was on Anabuse, too. So I knew I wouldn't drink if I was on that stuff. So I said, okay, I could do a year. And So I hit my one-year anniversary, and I had a sponsor, but I don't really think I did the stuff other sponsors have taught me since then. And 6 months after 1 year, they sent me on a temporary assignment for school. And the third night at school, I went out and got drunk. And I loved it. I was like, where's my old friend been? And I drank. But I wouldn't call home and tell anybody about it. You know, I just figured, okay, I could do this here, go back home and just pick up like nothing happened. And, well, about the third night home again, she figured out, you know, something wasn't right. And she said, you drank while you were out in California. I said, yes, I did. And we got divorced 4 months later. I was a staff sergeant now. And, you know, she told me, you got an alcohol problem, and, you know, unless you do something about it, you're never going to get better. And I called home, talked to my family, and my brother pretty much gave me the tough love speech. There was no sympathy in this time. It wasn't like the first time when he just kind of introduced me to the steps. This time he said, you better learn the steps and work them. Well, that wasn't good enough, because for the next 3 years, I thought, you know, that, you know, it talks about drink like a gentleman, turn around, right about face. Well, I was a Marine, and I knew about faces, and I said, you know, I can do this if I just control my drinking. And I got promoted to gunny, and I said, I'm still doing all right. I haven't gotten any trouble. Things are good. Well, that staff NCO and Warrant Officer Protection Society got bigger, because I wasn't just drinking with the NCOs anymore. I was drinking with the big guys. And they weren't going to admit I was an alcoholic, because if they admit I was, what were they? So needless to say, I drank. I went out to California. And when I got back there this last time, I was an instructor at the schoolhouse. And I was pretty much drinking lunchtime, evening, and go back to school the next day and PT. I was still PTing, doing all that stuff. I said, you know, something's just not right. Well, in the meantime, I remarried my worst nightmare, as I call it. I call it my drunk marriage, because she was an alcoholic too. And the difference was, she wasn't ready to quit. And she told me, if you quit, I'm gone. And I said, okay. So, but it kind of started on November 10th, 1985, was the Marine Corps birthday. And being a proud Marine, we drank. And we drank all night. You know, anytime there's a long weekend or a birthday weekend, such as Marine Corps birthday, which Veterans Day is the next day, the 11th, so it was a 3-day Liberty Pass. So we pretty much stayed drunk for those 3 days. Problem is, I stayed drunk all the way to December 15th. Functional, working, teaching, everything. The morning of the 15th, when I woke up, I was so miserable, so desolate, so just, I said, you know, I went to the chaplain's office that morning, and I couldn't find a chaplain, but there was a deacon there, and a lot of churches have deacon, but so is the Catholic Church. And he was a retired Master Gunnery Sergeant. And he told me, he said, Tim, you know what you got to do? I looked at him. He says, you need to get to an AA meeting. And he said, we have one today at 11:45 here, right here in this building at the chapel. And I had to be honest with him for myself. I said, I don't ever want to go to my first meeting hungover, drunk, or anything. But if you give me 24 hours, I promise you I will not drink, and I will be at that meeting tomorrow. And, you know, he held me to that. And I knew he would, because he was, even though he's a retired Master Gunnery Sergeant, he had a lot more rank on his collar than I did. And so I showed up the next day, 11:45, and it was like my whole world just changed. Because three of my best drinking buddies, who I didn't know quit, were in that meeting. One of them was a corporal at the time. And Pat is part of my story as life continued in the Marine Corps. And they took me in. They said, welcome back. We're glad you're here. Now, are you ready to do what you're supposed to do? And I said, yes, I'm ready. And I don't know what happened, but I found a sponsor that day. Him and his wife were both in this program, and there you go. And they taught me more things about this fellowship and these 12 steps than I ever dreamed possible. They also had two little French poodles, and those two French poodles became my best friend. And I didn't know this the first time I went to their house, But if those French poodles wouldn't have accepted me, I'd have never been allowed back. So it was a test. Little did I know. And I passed. So those dogs were both in both laps. And I cried. The first year, he kept telling me, just step one, step one, step one. So I believe him. Okay, I can't do anything else. I got to stay on step one. We were going to meetings. And we were doing 90 and 90 and 90 and 90 and just kept on going, kept coming back. And when my one-year anniversary came, I said, can I go to step two now? He said, what are you talking about? He says, you're ready to do the action. He says, you're an 8, 9, and 10. I said, what? When did we do a four-step? You know, did we miss something along the way? And he says, no. He says, you've been doing it in my kitchen table for the last 360-some days. He says, now it's time to grow up. And he says, it's time to get into service. You know, back then, you cleaned ashtrays. You cleaned those big 50, what they call silver bullet 50-pot coffee pots. And that was I thought was my penance in that first year, but it became my job, and I did it religiously. And I wasn't even a smoker, so talk about punishment. I thought I was getting penance. But it worked. It taught me humility. It taught me that I'm not bigger than the world. And it taught me to just be plain old Tim, not Gunny, not anything else. It taught me to be Tim. And for the next 2-3 years, I was in California until 1989. And when I was ready to leave California, I thought I was going to Hawaii. And, of course, Marine Corps has ways of playing games on you, and they sent me back to Okinawa, Japan. And you talk about sweat beads. Now, I had 4.5 years sober, but I was scared to death because my last tour in Okinawa, Japan was not a pretty tour. The only thing I still have left from that tour back then in 1989 was a Kenwood stereo with Pioneer speakers. That's the only thing I had left because I've been through two marriages now and, you know, been sober now, but I was afraid. I really was for the first time. And Lee and Sandy both sat there and told me, they said, Tim, you got a toolbox. We filled it. There's love in there, and just take it with you. And I'm like, oh, God, these guys are crazier than the Marines are. You know, and he was Air Force, so, you know, I knew he was crazy. But he loved me unconditionally. He loved me no matter what, and sent me off to Okinawa. And I didn't just stay 1 year. I stayed 3 years. Actually, 2.5. I went over there the first year. I fell in love, and not just physically love, but I fell in love with Okinawa. I fell in love with the culture. Fell in love with deep-sea diving. Was certified not only in open water, but rescue diver. The only thing I didn't do was go for Master Diver, but I enjoyed the dickens out of it, and it was a lot of fun. But, you know, immediately, my first night on island, I called the MWR AFES group and said, is there any meetings on base? And they said, pick a night. There's meetings every night on every base. Just went yourself to the – you went to the USO club, and that's where the meetings were at. So I went that night and found a group of about 25 drunks, and of all different ranks, didn't matter. And we had a good old-fashioned AA meeting. And I instantly knew I was where I was supposed to be. And that gave me a ray of hope that the next 365 days would be okay if I just did it one day at a time, as you taught me. And you taught me well, because obviously it stuck. Not only I worked the steps, but I started to live the steps. I started to work with young Marines to help them. Because when I was in North Carolina, the one thing I hated when I went to AA meetings was to hear a young Marine complain about their senior staff NCOs. And I hated it. It's like, we're here to stay sober, not bitch about things on base, you know, leave it on base. But when I got over to Okinawa, it wasn't that way. People weren't complaining. People were living soberly. Because we had nothing else better to do. You either found God, lifted weights, got drunk, or in this case, we stayed sober. And we found God along with it, you know. And so my childhood God that I believed in, I continued. I was playing guitar. I was doing all the things I loved to do, working out, doing all the things I enjoyed. So when my reenlistment came up and I was over there, they sent me back stateside for a school. And in the meantime, I was already coaching and doing a bunch of other stuff. And I met wife number three. And she was a Marine. And Belinda was probably the best thing that happened to me in a romantic sense, because I had tried two civilians and they weren't working. You know, and I said, you know what, maybe if I marry a Marine, I'll be okay, because she's going to understand me. Well, I didn't realize she was an adult child of an alcoholic until we dated about 3 months. So it definitely was a dream come true, and it definitely it worked for quite a few 24 hours. We came back. One of the beautiful things about with me staying overseas and coming back, we both got appointed. She got appointed to a listening commission program. I got appointed to warrant officer. And you talk about, you know, things I never dreamed would come true. Well, living soberly, it came true. The steps started becoming, the promises came, and I learned that if I just don't drink, work with other alcoholics, and listen to my sponsor, good things will happen. And they did. You know, I became a SACO. I did all this work that I could with other Marines, senior enlisted people who it was embarrassing if they got a DUI, and God forbid if an officer did, because it was death. You know, they would be court-martialed and be gone. And fortunately, I was able to save a few, you know, some senior enlisted that I knew, a couple of officers. But, you know, I learned that it was okay to be a Marine and be sober. You know, I didn't think the two were even in the same sentence, let alone possible. Out of a 24-year military career, I spent 15 years sober. That was probably my first best accomplishment. Just staying sober one day at a time was the best part. But doing that was probably a godsend, because there was a lot of club calls I had to go to. But I learned I didn't have to be the first one there. But most importantly, I didn't have to stay. I could leave on my terms. And my colonel knew it, and he respected that. So I learned along the way that being sober was a pretty good thing. It was actually better than being a good Marine. You know, Blynn and I were married. In 2001, well, actually 2000, my last deployment, I was over in Greece, Assyrus, and my general and colonel and everybody was trying to get me to stick around. I was coming up in zone for major, and I just looked at him. I said, you know, gentlemen, there's nothing more the Marine Corps can give me. And I know this isn't a Marine Corps story, but my life has been the Marine Corps. And for anybody here that knows me, as Al said, it's a Marine through and through. But those gentlemen respected me enough to try to make me realize that I had a calling still in the Marine Corps. And I looked at all of them, and with the serious look as I can, I said, but you know what? I didn't go to school. I didn't. And in the meantime now, I went back to school, got my undergrad, and also got my master's all in 4 years. And those were other dreams that I threw away back in 1977 when I enlisted in the Marine Corps. So again, more things got revealed, more things happened. And I just told him, I said, you know what? It's been a wonderful 24 years, but it's time. It's time to step back, let the young come up, and let these old guys, you know, go out and find out what real life's all about. And that took a big thing, because on April 1st, 2001, when I stood in front of a company of Marines and said my final farewells, and they had all these kudos to give me and everything, I wasn't quite sure where life was going to take me, but I knew one thing. I knew AA would take me. Because even though I took the uniform off, AA never left. You all were there. You brought me into your arms. You told me, keep coming back. You know. And I learned over the years that you never leave one place and go to another without knowing where you're going first. You know, I was learning that you can find an AA meeting before you can get a hotel reservation. You know, that's pretty good stuff to get to an AA meeting before you even check in your hotel when you're moving. But when I moved up to, in July of 2001, I moved up to New York, Woodbridge, New Jersey, just outside of New York City. And if anybody knows, July 2001 was only a few months before 9/11. And I went through the Beirut bombing in the Marine Corps. I went through Grenada in the Marine Corps. I never went to combat, but when 9/11 happened, I was National Director for National Communication Operation in Woodbridge, New Jersey, and I was there. The song that says, you know, remember when? I do remember when, because at 5 a.m. I was at work, and at 8 o'clock I saw the first plane hit. And I'd only been on the Marine Corps not even 100 days, 90-some days, and I thought I was going back. I said, okay, Lord, you know, whatever you want me to do, I'm willing to do. But you know where my butt was that night? I was in an AA meeting, crying and reminiscing what my 9/11, which was the Beirut bombing. And the very next day, I went downtown New York and got involved, got in other action to help not only fellow Marines and sailors, but to help civilians and help anybody I could. And, you know, what a blessing. Because had I not been sober, I would have never had that opportunity. And I truly believe that to this day, that God put me where I needed to be. As Al said, God puts people in our life, and he did. You know, so here in New Jersey, was still married. She was still in the Marine Corps. She got reassigned back from Guantanamo Bay, which is Camp X-Ray. Anybody remembers the news lines from back in the 2001, 2002 time frame? She got reassigned to Florida, and I went down there belligerent, you know, not too happy because I had a great job in New York and made a lot of good friends. Great AA, really grew through a sponsor that I had there. And I'll tell you, between AA meetings, sponsorship, and keep going to meetings and doing the next right thing, it continued. I went down to Florida, couldn't find work, but I found AA, found a sponsor, did everything you told me. Don't leave home without it. And, you know, one of the blessings there was, even though I wasn't working a real job that I wanted, I knew what patience was. I knew what it meant to get on my hands and knees and pray and ask God to just give me what he wants. And I was working for an insurance company, and I wasn't completely satisfied, but it was a job, and it was fun. Well, after about 9 months of that, my fun meter was pegged, and I asked God, you know, what's next? What do you have in store for me? And I put an ad in on a Sunday morning before I went to church, came home and had a response in my email. I'm like, who the heck adds job ads on a Sunday? It was for an operations position. And lo and behold, it was for the company that I'm working for right now as of today down in Tallahassee, Florida. And I spent the next year with them. In the next 9 months before that year was up, I got a divorce. It wasn't because of drinking. It wasn't because of AA. It wasn't because of all the other stupid things I did in my drinking days. It was simply situations that were uncontrollable. And even in recovery, you realize you can't fix everything. She was a wonderful woman, but we had some problems, and one of them was our eldest son. I adopted her two boys when we got married. I never had any children of my own. And we had a lot of difficulties. And I learned a few things. I learned that there's adolescence incest, but without being incest, it's where a mother, the child becomes more than what the spouse is to the mother. And it was tough. I mean, I went through counseling for a year for that because I didn't know what to do. And my sponsor, I mean, we were on the phone daily over this. I mean, because I was just like, God, what do I do? I love her, but I can't live this way. You know, I knew drinking wasn't the option. I knew darn right well you weren't going to let me drink, and God wasn't going to let me drink. And so when I got divorced, I immediately said, I'm getting out of Florida. This isn't home. I had three choices, Chicago, Knoxville, Tennessee, or Jackson, Mississippi, and there was no way I was going to Mississippi. Don't even know anybody down there. So what was I going there for? But I would have went to Chicago because my sister lived there, and I certainly would have went to Knoxville, which is where I went. So March of 2004, 3 days after my divorce, I was in Knoxville as a branch manager for Eastern Tennessee. But immediately again, got a sponsor. This time I went up. I got a naval aviator, you know. And I'm a ground pounder, so I don't know how we got along. But we hit it off. He lived a couple of minutes from my brother's house in Loudoun, Tennessee. Went to a lot of meetings. Kind of odd. I was going to meetings, but my brother, I love him to death, but he wasn't. And I was always picking on him. I said, I know you got a lot more sobriety than me, but you know what? Meaning, you know, if you go to a meeting, it might be better, you know. And, of course, he didn't take too likely to me telling him about meetings. But I respected him, and I said, okay. But he did start a group in our church. While I was there, and he did go to meetings there, and that was a gift given that he went. Wrapping it up from Knoxville, 7 years ago, July 28th, 2008, I moved to Hermitage, Tennessee. I had two jobs in Knoxville. I was with Home Depot for a short period of time as an HR. Home Depot did a lot of changes, and I ended up coming back to Guardsmart and took over Middle Tennessee. Good opportunity. It was a good professional move. But more importantly, it was the best personal move I made for Tim. And for those of you that met me 7 years ago in these rooms, and there's a lot of you in here, I was still crying. I was still not sure where my life was going. Because I had made a lot of stupid choices, both out of recovery and in recovery. Because while I was in Knoxville, marriage number four. 3 months, okay? Sober 3 months, but I made a mistake. And my brother still reminds me about it today. But when I got here, you know, I was at 23, going on 23 years, and I met a gentleman who not only was my best friend, but he was someone when I first met him, I took instant liking to. And we were very similar in recovery time, and I didn't care. He had what I wanted. Not quite sure I've gotten there yet, but he's given me a lot more than I ever dreamed I would get. Al has seen me through a fifth marriage, and good Lord willing, December 11th, I'll have 5 years, and December 16th, good Lord willing, I'll have 30 years in recovery. So it's proved to take. It took me 25 years sober to finally get it right. So I must have grew up, finally caught up emotionally to the physical, you know. But Al's seen me through all this. He showed me this. He re-taught me the steps. We did a four-step about 3.5 years ago because I was going through some real rough times. Being 24 years sober and married 18 months, scared to death because I never had this. I mean, other than the 14 years with Belinda, I would get into a marriage and psh, off I went when it got tough, you know. And he taught me tough love. He taught me to stick through it. He taught me to communicate. He taught me that if I just utilize this program and the steps that I've been given, I can do it one day at a time. And Amy just this 2 weeks ago Wednesday went through an open heart surgery. And that's the reason why she's not with me here tonight, and she deeply regrets that. But she's home recovering, and it's a gift of God. You know, she's a gift of God. You are a gift of God. I don't claim anything I've gotten in recovery on my own accord. This past Monday, I gave my resignation to this job I've had 11 years. I'm not retiring. Buckle your seats, I'm moving. But I've already called the inner group in Dallas, Texas. I've already got phone numbers. So when I arrive on December 12th, guess where this butt's going? To an AA meeting. I don't care what hour I get there. Because I learned a long time ago, you don't go empty-handed. You don't leave home without knowing where you're going next or where you're going to your next meeting. You have taught me that. Everybody that's in this room tonight, that whether you knew me then or know me tonight, you're friends I just never met yet, and you'll go with me to Dallas, Texas. Because none of us get here by mistake. None of us stay here without one another, and I truly believe that. This has been a gift that God gave me freely. All I had to do was become humble and put the hand of AA out there. I've actually, in the last 4 years, sponsored three gentlemen, one of which we think's in Hawaii right now. Last I saw on LinkedIn, he is. I do have one that's doing very well, and he lives out in Lebanon where I'm at, and we meet every week. And a third one's still up for a vote. Not sure what he's doing yet. But we're getting there. We're working on it. And I had to tell my sponsor tonight for the first time, because I haven't even told my own brother yet, that what decision I just made this past week to take this job in Dallas, Texas. But, you know, yeah, I have my priorities. And my priorities are to take care of me first. You know, he's still my sponsor, and he'll stay my sponsor for the rest of my life, no matter who the next sponsor is. Because if it wasn't for Lee and Sandy being gone today, they're just my sponsors in heaven now, you know. And I do try to stay in touch with past sponsors, you know. That's something else I learned. You never walk away from anything. You just continue to go. I'd like to close with one thing. And I always try to read this because, to me, I learned it a long time ago, and it's the very last paragraph on page 164. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We will share with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and we will surely meet some of you as we trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. And God bless, and thank you so much.
If you don't.
You've been working it, girl.